Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, January 21st, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Jonga Kandemiri.
And I'm Sithandekile Mhlanga.
Here are our top stories this evening.
People living with the HIV virus in the countries are said to benefit from the National AIDS Council's plans to decentralize funding to the district level.
The problem of uncollected garbage and littering by members of the public continues to blight Zimbabwe's towns and cities, including Bulawayo and the capital Harare, otherwise known as the Sunshine City.
And a defiant President Barack Obama delivers his sixth and ultimate State of the Union address at the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C.
The National AIDS Council says plans to decentralize funding of HIV/AIDS programs to the district level are at an advanced stage. NAIC Finance Director Albert Manenji says decentralization will help people living with the HIV virus receive treatment early and through their local institutions that know their records. The council is currently running orientation meetings in Mashingo, where representatives from its 85 districts are being introduced to the plan. This year, the council set aside $5 million to support various HIV prevention interventions throughout the country. Each province will benefit from $500,000 the NAC will distribute to districts to meet their specific needs based on district-driven plan. Manenji tells Studio 7 the plan is not new, but implementation had been delayed due to a number of issues.
What we are doing is that we're trying to make sure that resources are actually provided to the districts. Why? Because in Zimbabwe, we use what we call district response initiative, which means that as we have our national response to HIV and AIDS, districts have got a different uniqueness in terms of the drivers that drive the epidemic and what have you. So as a result, each and every district is expected to respond in a way that will suit what is relevant to it. So you may discover that the drivers in Bedbridge are totally different from the drivers in Harare. So at the end of the day, the resources are now supposed to be provided to these districts so that they are able to respond to their needs. What they are expected to do is to identify what we call the hotspots, the key drivers, and the plans and activities they have.
What are the advantages of this decentralization of funds?
The advantages of decentralization of funds, you know, when people are planning and knowing that they've got the resources, they are able to plan and come up with whatever the resources they have. And secondly, you realize that when you do planning with the communities and what have you, the funds are going to go direct to the beneficiaries, the communities, the disadvantaged society. Those will be the beneficiaries. Whereas if it is from the national point of view, what it means is that as the money trickles down, I think there will be some safety nets where some resources will actually remain at different level. But under this level, we are saying we give you the money and you plan at that level so that the money benefits directly the beneficiaries as compared to where sometimes the funds, they then go to administration and other issues.
That was National AIDS Council Finance Director Albert Manenji on the phone from Mashingo with Studio 7.
The problem of uncollected garbage and littering by members of the public continues to blight Zimbabwe's towns and cities, including Bulawayo in the capital Harare, otherwise known as the Sunshine City. Once revered for its orderliness and cleanliness, Harare's glow has disappeared under the shadows of piling rubble and refuse. And now one man is taking matters into his hands, calling for a national cleaning day and calling on members of the public and politicians to take responsibility and clean their surroundings. Buhera South Member of Parliament Joseph Chinotimba brought the issue to the national spotlight this week with a demonstration in Bare where he collected trash in his car near a school. councils complain they are financial hamstrung to carry out their mandate because residents are not paying their dues. Reporter Ntungameli Nkomo reached Harare Councillor Peter Moyo for his perspective on the cleanliness push.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I would like to thank Honorable Chinotimba for a job well done. But I would also want to remind him that this problem is not a problem on its own. It's a problem which was started by the government, which is the ruling party where he's coming from. And he's starting to see it now, but we saw it long back. The local authorities are incapacitated because, first and foremost, the ruling party saw it fit to recruit political activists from their side. And they started to relax the like people who are on pension to sit at work and leave jackets in the office and go out of office. And today, things have gone out of hand. It's not the problem of the people who are staying in these suburbs. That is the problem of government. Because when the city of Harare, city of Ulawa, city of Gweru, city of Masingo, whatever city in Zimbabwe, is not funded, you cannot then expect a local authority to take money from the tree. You cannot expect the people who are staying in these residential areas to come and pay to the local authority when the companies are closing on a daily basis. However, it is good enough for residents to make sure that if they are going to dump something outside their houses, it's not advisable to just dump anyway. They have to find a place far away from their vicinity so that they are not going to contaminate a lot of diseases because they are endangering their own life, and especially the kids who will be playing in those streets.
As council, are there any measures that you are taking to hold litterers accountable?
We have done the best we can, but the problem is that, as I said, we are trying our level best to have these anti-litter monitors in each and every suburb, 100 people, 80 people, just to conscientize people to throw litter where it is designated to.
That is Harare Councillor Peter Moyo on the line with reporter Ntungameli Nkomo from Harare.
A 15 months in federal prison. That's the time handed a Chicago man, Gregory Turner, by a judge yesterday after he was convicted of unlawfully lobbying for the removal of American sanctions on President Robert Mugabe and his ZANU-PF inner circle. The 72-year-old was accused of lobbying U.S. congressmen to remove travel and financial sanctions on Zimbabwean officials in a deal that would have earned him and his accomplice, Ben Israel, more than $3 million. Mr. Israel is already doing time after pleading guilty last year. In mitigation yesterday, Mr. Turner apologized for breaking the law, but said he was unapologetic for his anti-Zimbabwe sanctions push, saying the measures are affecting ordinary Zimbabweans. Reporter Ntungameli Nkomo reached the political analyst Nkululeko Siwanda for perspective.
I think that we could make both sides that America wants to show the world or prove to itself that its laws do matter. But in a case such as this, where there was a law that restricted any business or engagement with Zimbabwe, they'd have expected that the repudiation would include a quite stiff term in prison. And I think 15 months is quite generous in terms of issues that include talking about national sovereignty and international relations. I think usually you find that people get punished very heavily for such crimes. But I think that this one was merely a case of showing that the Americans firstly no longer believe in the Zimbabwean sanctions as such, but also that their laws do matter. I think his mistake was to get caught in this instance.
In mitigation, Mr. Turner said, and I quote, "I'm sorry for the mistake, but I'm not sorry for attempting to help 14 million people who are starving." What do you make of that?
I think that Mr. Turner seems to have believed that and to have had the conviction that something needed to be done and had no faith in the elections, and that you think that he is one of the remnants of the pre-African independence, pre-decolonial period activists who supported not just the African-American cause in the United States, but also the African cause in the colonized continent. And I think that that remains the case. But I think the broader point is a point that we have regularly made, that the manner in which the politics of sanctions against Zimbabwe and the international relations surrounding the Zimbabwe question was badly dealt with by the Western governments in terms of separating the struggle for democracy and the imperialist anti-colonialist rhetoric or anti-colonialist thinking.
A political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda on the line from England with the reporter Ntungamile Nkomo.
United States President Barack Obama last night delivered his sixth State of the Union address at the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C., to a new Congress controlled by the opposition Republican Party. In his faced and defiant speech, the president touted the improving economy on his watch and made the case that government has a role in ensuring equal opportunity for all. Mr. Obama argued that a raft of new policy proposals, which include an ambitious plan to raise taxes on wealthy Americans and financial institutions to pay for progressive priorities that include favoring the middle class. He called for cooperation between the two main political parties in the U.S., saying there isn't a red America or blue America. Mr. Obama received much applause for calling on Congress to make sure women are paid equal pay as men.
Of course, nothing helps families make ends meet like higher wages. That's why this Congress still needs to pass a law that makes sure a woman is paid the same as a man for doing the same work. Missed? It's 2015. It's time. We still need to make sure employees get the overtime they've earned. And everyone in this Congress who still refuses to raise the minimum wage, I say this. If you truly believe you could work full-time and support a family on less than $15,000 a year, try it. If not, vote to give millions of the hardest-working people in America a raise.
President Obama also lobbied Congress to make education at community colleges free.
By the end of this decade, 2 in 3 job openings will require some higher education. 2 in 3. And yet we still live in a country where too many bright, striving Americans are priced out of the education they need. It's not fair to them, and it's sure not smart for our future. And that's why I'm sending this Congress a bold new plan to lower the cost of community college to zero.
President Obama, those were remarks by President Obama in the U.S. Congress last night. For an analysis of the speech, Studio 7's Blessing Zulu reached human rights lawyer and Reagan Faso Democracy Fellow Arthur Gwagwa, who says the speech was very comprehensive and touched on issues of great importance to America.
Firstly, his concern about the middle class, that, you know, the middle class should be supported. But also his plan for the economy and other issues like, you know, environment, you know, foreign policy. And of course, I think his desire to work, you know, with, you know, the Republicans to bring about outstanding reforms in the next 2 years.
What are the takeaways for Zimbabwe from this address?
I think for me, there were lessons not only for the Zimbabwean government, but also for other actors like, you know, the opposition and, you know, Zimbabwean civil society in terms of addressing issues that really concern the ordinary people every day. If you noticed, he spoke about the concerns of ordinary families that fell on hard times, you know, during the recession. This is what government should be all about, you know, the people, about the ordinary people. But also, I think most importantly, you spoke about American values, about what it means to be a nation, what it means to be American. I think as a country in Zimbabwe, we have lost, you know, that sense of values, that sense of citizenship, what it means to, you know, to be Zimbabwean. So I think that was his strongest point, that we can learn from as Zimbabweans. But thirdly, I think the issue of, you know, bipartisanship, the need, you know, to work together across, you know, partisan lines. As Zimbabweans, you know, the past 14 years has been highly polarized, and we could learn, you know, something from President Obama's appeal to the Republicans for Americans to work across the partisan lines.
Human rights lawyer and Reagan Faso Democracy Fellow Arthur Gwagwa speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Washington, D.C. Dan Moyo, a Zimbabwean based in the United States, who is also a member of the MDC formation led by Morgan Tsvangirai, tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube that the middle-class agenda set by Mr. Obama is applicable in most countries, including Zimbabwe.
He was able to articulate the fact that middle-class economics works, because when you uplift the middle class, you are empowering a larger population of people than you would if your focus was on just the rich and the affluent. So basically, by making sure that the middle class have good jobs, have good education, they're able to contribute towards the building the American economy. So it is a real brilliant strategy, because Here we are looking at numbers. The more people that are able to afford things, then the more production is going to be required in the country for services and goods, and therefore it is really a brilliant strategy.
Can this be applicable in a nation like Zimbabwe?
Yes, I think with willingness and leadership, that is direction, it is very much achievable. I know that in most cases, when a country like Zimbabwe faces such high unemployment rates, it's very difficult to reverse that. But you have to put plans in place that attract investments. You have to make the homeland open to people to come from outside, to have that surety that their investments are going to be secure, that the government is not going to interfere with the running of the business.
That was Dan Moyo, a Zimbabwean based in the United States, who is also a member of the MDC formation led by Morgan Tsvangirai, speaking with Studio 7 from Washington, D.C.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kilohertz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency. Now, a look at regional and international news.
2 days of talks between the United States and Cuba, aimed at ending more than 50 years of Cold War era hostility, begin today in Havana. The meetings are taking place 1 month after U.S. President Barack Obama and Cuban President Raul Castro announced the two countries were prepared to reestablish formal diplomatic relations. Today's opening round will focus on immigration, especially Washington's long-standing policy of allowing Cubans to stay in the United States once they step foot on American soil.
A top Lord's Resistance Army commander is now in custody at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Dominic Ongweni will undergo medical exams after being flown yesterday from the Central African Republic and is expected to make his first court appearance soon. His arrival at the court ends a nearly 10-year effort to have him face 3 counts of crimes against humanity and another 4 counts of war crimes. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said Ongwen's arrival in The Hague marks an important milestone in accountability and a step toward justice for those victimized by the Lord's Resistance Army.
And Zambia's Electoral Commission halted the release of presidential election results today as voting in some districts stretched into a second day. In a statement on its website, the chair of the commission, Justice Irene Mambilima, said continued announcement of the results while people were still voting could unduly influence the voters. A Zambian newspaper, the Lusaka Times, cites it as saying the delays were the result of bad weather, which made some polling stations inaccessible.
Eleven bodies of Zimbabweans who died in a road accident in Botswana almost 2 weeks ago are expected in the country this evening. 8 of the victims are from Malila Line in Cholocho under Chief Gambus Tole, who's part of the team tasked with the repatriation of the bodies. Another victim is from Malanda Village in Cholocho, while two are siblings aged 7 and 8 from Machinge area in Vilingoma, Bulilima. The children's mother and six other passengers survived the accident, which occurred when a truck they were travelling in hit a donkey and rammed into a tree, killing 11 people on the spot. Cholocho District Administrator Nosizi Dube reportedly said most of the victims did not have passports, which delayed the repatriation of the bodies from Mahalapai Mortuary in Hospital in Botswana. Chief Gambu told Studio 7 that some government officials and relatives of the deceased have already left to receive the bodies at the Plumtree border post this evening. Gambu tells Studio 7 the government is assisting with burial expenses, and Vice President Phelekezela Mpoko has already donated groceries that are being used during the funeral wakes.
Villagers, community leaders and government officials will divide themselves among various families to bury the deceased. Most of them are related and come from the same families. This is a very tragic event and the community is shaken.
That was Chief Gambu Sithole of Cholocho on the line with Studio 7 from Cholocho.
The campaign by the Ministries of Health and Education targeting school children to eliminate the problem of bilharzia in the country ended its third day today. The National Mass Drug Administration program aims to distribute drugs and treat millions of children for bilharzia and intestinal worms. The Minister of Health says the program is running smoothly. The program is said to prevent illnesses in children aged between 1 to 15 years, with drug administration points located at schools and health centers. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to medical practitioner Dr. Douglas Gwatizo, who explains how the bilharzia and intestinal worm disease is caught and how it affects the body.
There's a stage in the cycle of the bilharzia worm that finds itself into the snail, and when it comes out of the snail, it then floats in water. And when somebody goes into there, they pick it up, it burrows through their skin and then spreads through the bloodstream. There are various stages that include the liver and also the bladder stage when bilharzia then sets in. And this is acquired through, you know, playing or walking through or wading through water bodies, generally those that are stagnant, especially in the remote areas of this country where bilharzia control or spraying of chemicals do not take place.
How exactly does one know what are some of the symptoms, if any, or what are some of the signs that someone will know that they might have bilharzia?
When somebody, you know, walks through or plays in water, it's not easy to notice that you've been infected or affected. But there are some who may feel that they feel itchy and scratching and, you know, funny, you know, pins and needles on their skin. But that does not mean that it's definitely bilharzia. It's only when the bilharzia worm gets to the bladder stage, when it starts laying eggs, that then, you know, burrow through the walls of the bladder, of the urinary bladder, that is. And when that happens, usually the person is affected notices that there is blood at the end of their stream of urine. And the reason why it so happens is that these eggs that are on the bladder walls, they sort of break off. That tells you that, you know, somebody's got bilharzia.
That was medical practitioner Dr. Douglas Gwatizo speaking on the line from Harare with reporter Tatenda Gumbo.
And now an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
When President Barack Obama strode into the chamber of the U.S. House of Representatives last evening to report to assembled lawmakers, diplomats, and other distinguished guests on conditions in our country, he was following in the footsteps of other presidents who have used an occasion required by our Constitution in an effort to make history. Since President George Washington addressed the first Congress in 1790, all chief executives since then have followed his lead. And what began as a message between one branch of government to another has become a widely anticipated communication between the president and the people of both America and the world. Over time, radio and television coverage have increased the audience enormously. Now, President Obama is turning to social media, such as Facebook and Twitter, to reach a broader listenership of younger, digitally connected Americans for what is expected to be his most important speech of the year. Even presidents facing a Congress dominated by members of the other political party, as President Obama does now, have used the occasion to announce and promote significant new policies. President James Monroe, for example, crafted his 1823 State of the Union address to lay out a warning to the nations of Europe against interfering in the affairs of the Americas, the Monroe Doctrine. Abraham Lincoln told the nation in 1862 that he wanted to end slavery. And in 1941, Franklin Roosevelt laid out the four fundamental liberties that people everywhere in the world should enjoy: freedom of speech and of worship, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. On a certain level, however, the speech transcends politics and statecraft. The Constitution's framers devised the address to promote transparency and accountability in government. Because the president has access to the most information on the complex workings of government, he is required to give a comprehensive assessment of the overall state of the nation and our relations with the world. It also speaks to the separation of powers in our government, in that while the president uses the address to propose new programs and initiatives, it is Congress that decides how to proceed. And ultimately, both branches are accountable to the speech's larger audience, the American people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about the issue of uncollected garbage in the cities and towns.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
And now to recap today's top stories.
People living with the HIV virus in the country are said to benefit from the National AIDS Council's plans to decentralize funding to the district level.
The problem of uncollected garbage and littering by members of the public continues to blight Zimbabwe's towns and cities, including Bulawayo and the capital Harare, otherwise known as the Sunshine City.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Sitanekile Mhlanga wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.